This is the Meat Eater Podcast coming at you shirtless, severely bug-bitten, and in my case, underwearless.
We hunt the Meat Eater Podcast.
You can't predict anything.
Presented by OnX Hunt, creators of the most comprehensive digital mapping system for hunters. Download the Hunt app from the iTunes or Google Play Store. Know where you stand with OnX.
Okay, our guest, Amber Cornack, right?
Yeah. Cornack.
You got mauled by a bear, so there's that. But we're going to talk about a lot of other stuff first and lay some groundwork. How sick are you of? Are you sick of being the woman that got mauled by a grizzly?
You know, sometimes I get a little tired of it. But I haven't heard people use maul. That's kind of not really the word they use. Tragedy. They say, oh, I heard you were involved in a tragedy. Or
they don't say, hey, I heard you got mauled by a grizzly.
No. They
a tragedy?
Off, yeah, they call it tragedy or tragedy. There's another word they use for it. And I'm like, I don't really call it that. I mean, it was just another day, you know? And they look at me and I'm like.
They call it a tragedy?
Yeah, tragedy.
Yeah, you're sitting here, tragic? You're fine.
Accident?
Yeah, but they use a
tragedy
big
means
word.
That someone in your family died or you got messed up in a way that you'll never recover.
Oh, I know. It's not the right word for it.
No, you just had a major
attack?
No, they used
mix up?
No, not a
heard you had a horrible mix up.
Actually, there was a workman's comp lady with me yesterday, one of my appointments, and she called it interesting. She goes, oh yeah, I heard you had an interesting encounter. And I said, you know, that's a great way to put it. So that's the first time I've ever heard put it. Oh, horrific. That's the word. They call it horrific. So it's anything that's, you know, might scare people. And me, I'm just like, I don't know.
That's fair.
I think that's fair. Horrific.
No.
If I was in that. if that happened to me, I would describe it as a horrific encounter.
No, you'd have to say, I heard you had what I would regard a horrific encounter. But if you just want to be straight up, you'd be like, I heard you got mauled by a grizzly. And you'd be like, why, yes, I did. But there's more to me than just that. But to be, you know, I know there's a natural tension here.
Yeah.
Because I'm very interested in that while recognizing that you're a complex, accomplished individual who has many aspects to their lives that go beyond a terrible, horrific mix-up that you had.
Yeah.
So we'll get there. Okay. But first I want to talk about Yanni's chicken business because Yanni has a new chicken business.
Yeah, you should have heard Jennifer last night after she realized the demand. She's like, you know, we got more room in that chicken coop for at least another half dozen, which, you know, whatever. I don't think it's going to increase the workload if we added a half dozen chickens right now.
So you're getting nine, they're throwing 9 eggs a day.
Yeah, but I think sometimes they're throwing more than some of them will lay two in a day now.
And you and the Putellas crew, you're only good for how many a day?
You know, if I'm home, I can't say we keep up with that, but we can get close between breakfast and some baking, you know, that goes on. But if I leave for a week, then I come home and there's like two full buckets of eggs. So,
yeah, I just bought 12. How'd you decide to sell them by the dozen?
I'll give you one guess.
I bought a dozen eggs.
I should split them in half at six.
I would sell 10 eggs.
I would probably get the same amount of money for six as I am getting
for
a dozen.
Do 10. Because like you sell donuts, fur traps, and eggs by the dozen. And snares.
Those are the only things you can think of that come in dozens?
Yeah. Traps.
I'm sure there's other
and
things.
Donuts and eggs. All great things.
Bagels, as you call them.
Yeah, those sell by the dozen. I would say, because Yanni's trying to get $4 a box because he's trying to pay for his organic.
And it's funny. Everybody that we've said $4 to, they're like, we should be paying you $5.
Yeah, I was so pleased with the transaction and so pleased with the quality of the eggs I had this morning that I just gave him $5 and paid him down on another dozen. So he's now sitting on 10 of my dollars.
I'm ahead. You know, I had a guy that
I would sell him a dollar. Listen, I would sell him a dollar an egg. I cracked, like, this morning Jimmy had two. I had two. Matthew had one. I'd pay $5 for that.
Sure. I mean, when you have eggs in a restaurant, you're probably paying that per egg.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like it in the, being in the business where you, when you're giving me money before you receive the item I'm supposed to give you. A guy I guided once.
You can get in trouble like that,
though. Was in fast food. And when he was looking at business to get into, he was like, that's one of the few places where people give you the money first and then they wait to get what they paid for.
That's a good point.
Yeah. He liked that about
it. But you might wind up getting underwater because you're going to take a lot of $5 bills and then you're going to go home and they're all going to be dead because you know where this is going.
Oh, you mean if I get hammered by a predator?
Yeah. You know where this is headed.
We've been good so far.
No, I heard from... your wife that two mysteriously vanished.
Yes, but that's they're not the only two. We also lost a lame duck with it being it was at our house less than a week and we lost it. We've also we started with like I don't know how many bantams. We had over a dozen bantams, which are just like a small version of a chicken because they were free, already laying, so we took them on. Much more skittish. I like the big ones much better because they're like pets. You can pick them up and hang out with them. The bantams, like, they're a pain in the butt.
They're the wild men of chickens.
Yeah, for sure. And they lay a teeny tiny egg. So you're eating like 3 to 4, you know, every time you eat. But anywho, where is that going with that? Every time we've had a weak or getting old chicken or duck, they are gone within days of showing that weakness. And we have not yet figured out to who. We've never lost a healthy one.
No tracks or anything?
No tracks. That's why we think it's...
He can't read
that's
sign.
Why, that's why we think it's...
He needs to bring up a tracker.
Amber,
go up there and tell you what's going on. She does mortality.
Well,
she does mortality.
You're up, you should look around.
Because you work on mortality projects, right?
I do,
where you go out and look at something dead and try to figure out what killed it?
Yeah. I actually love doing that. There's nothing... Even a... Actually, we had a rabbit. Some lady... brought in one of her rabbits, and she didn't know what had happened to it. Ended up dying, and we necropsied it, and it had bruising, and you could definitely see it looked like a dog had, just by the sign and where it had bit, it just grabbed it and shook it to death and then just let it go.
But he doesn't have the carcasses, though.
Oh, you don't have anything? No feathers? No nothing?
Nothing.
Oh,
every
man.
Now and then, Jennifer will describe it as a puff of feathers. That's why we think it's a bird. Because there's times we have big fir trees that are near everything around our property. And there's times when there's a golden eagle that's, you know, 3 feet tall sitting on the fir tree that's right over the chicken coop.
It's not your dogs, right?
They don't have dogs.
Oh, you guys don't have any dogs? Oh, okay.
All right. Quick thing. I have... You okay? Well, I got one more thing that we're going
to
get to.
Well, I want to make sure we come back to it. I want to know what goes into a necropsy of something as simple as a... is it necropsy or knee?
Necropsy. I've been told that a lot.
But just as something as simple
that's
as like
you say, right?
Cottontail rabbit. I'd like to know what goes into that. So I don't know if we want to cover that now or come back to it.
A cottontail necropsy?
Yeah. Or a bear, you know.
We'll touch on that first. No, we'll get to it. Can you remember?
I'll make a note. I got a few notes.
The thing I want to touch on is this: I have my fish shooting bow. I have an Oneida Osprey, which is a souped up fish shooting bow that I don't want, and I don't use it because I use my recurve for shooting fish. It's only been shot a few times. They're expensive bows. It's left-handed is the catch. If you want this bow, all you got to do is write in and make the subject line. Go onto our website, find the contact thing. Make the subject line fish shooting bow so we know what we're looking at. So we'll say fish shooting bow. And then you say, if you give me this bow, I will donate X dollars to the Theodore Roosevelt Conservation Partnership. We're going to just do a quick scan, not paying a whole lot of attention. Seems like the highest person, I'll send you the damn bow. And then on the honor system, you got to make sure you send them the money.
I was going to ask about that. We're going to do it on an honor system.
Honor system. Yeah, I'll have them send me we'll figure it out. So left-handed Oneida Osprey.
Send a screenshot of your payment.
Yeah. A left-handed Oneida Osprey fish shooting bow. Barely been shot, and it's got those sweet rubber thumb grips so you don't have to walk around the thing. Okay. Your first brush of fame was that you made it into Big Buck magazine.
Yeah.
Now that magazine just comes right out and says, right? Outdoor life, you're like, that could mean a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Field and Stream, that could mean a lot of things. Big Buck magazine.
Says a lot.
That's
straight to the point.
It's a good sized bear. That's not a big buck, but
yeah, you made it into Big Buck magazine when you were 16 years old.
Yep.
It identifies you as being from my home state of Michigan.
Yes. Not where you know, though, apparently.
No, we don't. All travel in Michigan, at least in my neck of the woods, is north-south.
Okay.
You don't veer. You just stay in the same line of longitude, and you stick to your longitude.
Where'd you grow up?
Allington.
Oh.
Lower Thumb area. Yeah. Yeah.
He's over in Kalamazoo, Yanni is.
Oh, yeah. You're from Michigan, too.
Yeah. Right. Central Michigan or whatever you call it.
Michiganders.
So you killed a big old bear when you were young.
Yeah. It was a decent-sized bear.
You grew up hunting.
I did.
What kind of hunting? Were you generalists or were you guys like specialists?
No, we kind of did everything. Mostly whitetail in Michigan. And we just happened to come upon the outfitters for doing black bear stuff. But yeah, we mostly did whitetail. And I didn't do it, you know, I did as much as I could with going to school and I worked and everything. But bow and gun. And we had tree stands and had quite a few acres and everything. So it was just enjoyable just to kind of sit out there. And I shot my first one was a fawn, a button buck. My dad had shot the doe, and I was like, oh, I can't leave the button buck.
Wiped out the whole family.
12, yeah. I felt really bad afterwards. I was like, oh, man, he probably would have made it, but I was so young, you know. So it was good just to get something under my belt and everything. So.
Did you grow up fishing?
Yeah, we did some fishing. We actually had a pond. We had a huge pond, and so we always bass fished in our pond. And
largemouth bass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
You guys cook those up or let them go?
No, we just let them go. Then we come back and catch them again. So yeah, you made it a lot of fun.
At what point in your life did you realize that you were going to be did you grow up being like, I'm going to be a wildlife biologist?
I did not. So, you know, I listened to a lot of your guys' podcasts and talked to other people and stuff. And they're all like, oh, yeah, I knew when I was a kid and super young. And you'd think I would have known because I started my first job. I worked at a greenhouse and I absolutely loved it and had it until I graduated high school.
Which greenhouse?
Just Mitts. It was local.
Yeah, so. I worked at a local greenhouse.
Oh, you did?
Moving those damn flats everywhere. Just moving them outside, moving them inside, moving flats.
It got you working, you know, playing stuff.
Quick story about that. I think I hesitate because I might have told this story.
I've never heard a greenhouse story that I can remember.
You know what a kill deer is? Uh-uh. A bird.
Oh, yeah. There's
birds that act like when you get close to them, they try to lure you away from their nest by acting like they got a broken wing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just some sly shit, right, for
a
bird?
Yeah.
We're out moving flats.
On the beach, right?
They hang out on the beach.
Yeah.
But this, like, we used to put all the flats when it was time to move the flats outside. And you'd be moving them out in. We moved them all. They're all outside. We had to move them all inside. And in one of them, a kill deer made a nest. And there's thousands of flats out in this field. You could go find this. You could find this place on Google Earth. And we're picking up the flats and realize that there's a bird nest in one of the flats. A flat of, like, what do you call them? It's like a flat full of the little pockets where the plants grow up.
Yeah.
And we leave it out there. So we pick up whatever 999 flats and leave the one flat with a bird nest sitting there. And I report to the owner, Mike. I say, we left that one because a killdeer laid a nest in it, so we didn't want to disturb it. I remember he got mad and walked out, dumped that thing out, and carried it inside.
Did it have eggs in it?
I'm telling you, man, yeah. He's just like a hard man with a flat.
I just hard didn't man want the bird.
anyhow, so you were interested. You had what E.O. Wilson calls biophilia.
Yeah. Probably, yeah.
You know that term?
I don't, actually.
Like an innate desire to, like biophilia,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
Love, of, you know, but an innate desire to connect with other life forms.
Yeah. No, I definitely thought I would have known back then, but I had no idea what I wanted to do. And I mean, growing up, and I don't know if you experienced the same thing where I was at, it was ag. So there was a lot of ag, and I knew there was game wardens or conservation officers, but I had no idea about wildlife biologists and things. You know, you learn biology, kind of the general sense, but we didn't have extra classes or anything similar to that to kind of give me an idea of what I would want to do. So I just kind of went with it, and I was like, well, I'm going to go and be a teacher, and we'll just kind of go with that and see. And then ended up not being a teacher and got my associate's in accounting. And then finally I realized I wanted to be a biologist.
Accounting?
Yeah. So I ended up in Montana from Michigan, cause that's where I wanted to go to school. I initially wanted to go to Alaska, but my dad told me no, cause my mom told him no.
They didn't want you that far away.
Well, if I was moving to Alaska, Dad was going to move there too. So there's a lot to hunt up there. And so,
yeah, but he could have just done that deal. Like, my brother lives there, so your dad could have hunted with you for everything.
I feel like we got to backtrack just a little bit because I want to know if you had siblings because I'm interested about how.
Oh, I know where he's going with this. Did you have a brother?
I did not.
That's why your dad hunted with you.
What is that supposed to mean? Because I was the only one.
It's true, man. Tell her, Yanni.
Well, yeah, I can't remember the numbers, but yeah, basically, like that. If females are to get into hunting via their dad, it's usually because they don't have a brother.
Firstborn or no brother?
Oh man,
that's what we were.
You have
told.
A sister?
No, I'm an only child.
That's what we were told by someone who spent a lot of time with hunter demographics.
Oh really?
Yeah, dads are like, well, I got to take her because I don't have any other choice. Old-timey dads. Old-timey dads.
I don't put it that way when I take out my girls hunting.
It's a reality.
I want a hunting buddy.
Yes, it's a reality of how people historically, it's how a segment of the American population has historically treated who goes hunting.
Yeah.
No, you're exactly right. I just think that you're misrepresenting the thoughts that are in the dad's head when he chooses to take his daughter hunting.
I'm putting a fine point on something. I don't think that that's her father's. I'm not saying anything bad about your dad, but you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And I'll back it up. Like in my family, all of the men, to some extent participated in hunting and fishing. Virtually none of the women.
Really? Okay.
It's just a thing. It sucks. There are myriad reasons, many of them unjustified. You can't untangle it all.
Right.
But it's just a reality.
Right.
90% of the people that buy a hunting license in this country are male, but less than 50% of the people that live in this country are male. So there.
That's crazy. It's crazy to think about, especially, and that's still now, like those are all accurate now, right? Yeah,
those are current numbers.
So, I don't know. I don't think it's. I don't think it's good. Yeah, but it's just
the way it
as
is.
Far as like what your father's motivations. I'm just teasing you.
Oh yeah,
a guy
yeah.
that looks at demographics was telling us he's like, when a woman does hunt, it's often that she has no male siblings. So, you moved out to study accounting.
Well, I moved out to Montana initially to do teaching just because I didn't know, not knowing what I wanted to do. I thought maybe being a teacher, and if I wanted to go back to school, I could take summer classes. But then I really didn't want to do that. And I started off at Carroll College in Helena.
Yeah.
And I ended up dropping out my last semester. I don't think I was ready to go to college. I just had no idea what I was doing. And moved back home. Well, my parents were in Wolf Creek at the time, so they had moved and got a place in Wolf Creek. And so I moved back home with them.
Wolf Creek, Montana.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then I just ended up going to the community college in Helena. And I went for accounting because, well, there's tons of jobs and it makes good money. So if I didn't know what I wanted to do, I'd eventually figure it out. And I spent 4 years doing that and worked
a lot.
So
you're like totally cynical.
I'm like...
You were totally cynical. You weren't like a romantic yet.
No. I mean, I loved hunting in the outdoors, but like I said, I didn't really know it existed actually until we moved to Montana and started talking to people about Forest Service, and we learned about the BLM, and because there's not a ton of public land in Michigan, and so we are always hunting.
Yeah, there's a lot, but not where you're at.
Right. No, it's a lot of private. We've always
like over my area north, it's shitloads of it.
Oh yeah, there's tons.
Yeah, I never stepped foot on public land until I moved out west.
Yeah, it's amazing, and it's so much to learn too. Because like I said, BLM and the ranches and everything that you go on. So just learning about all that and learning about, you know, the game wardens and that there is wildlife biology. And like I said, it took me about 4 years, but I also got rid of some negative influences and people who had been in the field, but were like, no, you don't want to do that because you don't make a ton of money and this and this and that. And I was like, well, what if this is something I really, really wanted to do? And then, I don't know, I just flipped a switch and started looking at schools and found Oregon State. And that's where I ended up getting my wildlife degree. So.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Full on, you got a bachelor's degree.
I did, yep.
Have you worked on a master's yet?
No, I'm working on it. My grades and my GRE scores are a little lower than what they're like, because I focused hardcore on getting work and getting a job and getting a ton of field experience. And I studied as hard as I could, but I don't quite make the cut for a GPA. So working on it. But
what do you mean? Like you can't go to grad school because your GPA?
Yeah, because it's low. It's a little lower than what they want.
Ah, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah, no, it's a big bummer. Yeah, because I was
so
focused.
How bad were they? Like D's?
No. They were better than that.
It's a competitive field.
It is super competitive. So, you know, they mostly want people with 3.0 or higher, and some people are even 3.5 or higher, and it's to weed out because it's so competitive. And the GREs are hard. I mean, it's like taking the SATs again.
GREs are miserable, man.
Yeah.
I took the GREs.
Yeah, they suck. Well, how long ago did you take? Because they changed all the scores and everything, how they score them.
I took the GREs and I don't know, 95.
Okay, yeah, so now they do a smaller scoring, but just kind of like they change the SATs over from the 1400s to the, whatever it is, a 3 or whatever, and now they've kind of changed them over too. So I've taken it twice. It's a pain in the butt every time.
Well, that's a bit. We'll circle back around to that. That's horrible, though.
It is what it is.
So then what was your first paid gig when you came out of school for biology?
Well, I actually had a paid gig in school. So when I started, when I was at Oregon State, I was just networking like crazy. And there was a lady there who was doing some marbled murrelet stuff, and she just needed somebody to do data entry. And so it was completely volunteer. And so I just did it. And from that, there was a job with Hancock Forest Management, an internship during the summer, and she forwarded my name. She knew the biologist there and everything, turned to my resume, and they hired me right away. So that was a paid position. So that was my first paid position. We were doing Pine Marten stuff, which was pretty cool.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, it was super cool. And I was on the coast of Oregon, which is awesome because there are a ton of black bears out there. And so even though I was looking for martens, I kept running into black bears and kept getting black bear pictures and just these huge bears. And I kept saying, is there any chance we're going to do any black bear work over here? Just because it was so awesome how many black bears were coming in on the coast, and they would just tear up everything. You know?
Were you, had you given up your bear hunting ways by then? Or were you still a black bear hunter?
No, I do like hunting black bears. It's not like deer elk though.
Yeah.
I don't want to do it all the time. I'd love to take one with my bow. I haven't taken one. But yeah, it would be really nice to take, I mean, an Oregon bear, especially a coastal bear, cause they're big, you know, and they're just, it's so hard to hunt them. So it just makes it such a good challenge.
You know? You were just running into them though.
Yeah. And they would tear down. So we were putting up cat food in on a tree in kind of a makeshift little fencing.
To get the pine marten hair.
Yeah, and then we had those, I can't even think of it, but stuff to catch hair, gun brushes and stuff nailed onto the tree to catch hair. And so they would go
up. I've seen that, but you better explain it real quick.
What do you mean?
A hair trap.
Oh, so, well, this, everyone's a little different. So I know they do sticky ones. They can do those too for like tracks. We didn't have those.
I was
those,
with my buddy, and he was setting up a gun brush one.
Oh, yeah.
He was trying to catch. Was he after fish or lynx?
I think it was lynx.
He was after lynx hair, and he was setting up a rig. Northern. Beaver meat.
Oh, okay.
He had a beaver, wired it to the tree, just a skinned out carcass, wired it to a tree up on a ridge top, and then he screwed in all the gun brushes, like the brass gun brushes.
Yeah.
Around it. So that any critter that went up and started wrestling with that frozen carcass was going to certainly, like a dog hair brush, leave a bunch of hair
right
on the gun brushes.
Oh, cool.
And he had to get it up out of the snow, you know.
Oh, cool. Mine wasn't as cool as that, but that's kind of, that's the same thing. We had one on each
side.
What
made it less cool, that you were using cat food?
Well, yeah. I feel like we could have used something else, but the bears loved it, so it was great. But they would also tear down my camera. So we'd set up a camera, you know, just a tree away or so in a good spot. And then we'd have those gun brushes, one on each side and then one on the top. And then the, like I said, it was just some fencing that we put together and we poke holes in the cat food so they could smell it.
And the pine martens like that.
They do. That's what they had. I think they use that. So it was on a study somebody was doing with Oregon State, and she did some work, I believe, in California, and that's what they were able to do. But I just was, I mean, I was getting bear after bear after bear.
Coming into that cat food.
Yeah.
Were you guys, are there fishers in there? Were you getting fisher hair?
No, I didn't get, like I said, all I ever got was bear hair. And my partner, I think
the only bycatch was bear hair.
Oh, porcupine. Not a porcupine. Why was I thinking porcupine? Why can't I think of it?
Pine squirrel?
No.
Badger.
What is it with the long? Oh, they're cute when they're little, but they have the long nose. Why am I?
Possums,
just,
grinners?
Yes, possum. Why was I thinking? Yeah.
Oh, they have possums up there.
It was really weird. And
you guys were getting possum hair?
We got one. Yeah. Huh. It was so weird because I was like, what is that? Is that a martin? It's got to be a martin. And just by the size and then its nose. And my buddy's like, no, that's a possum. Grinner.
Yeah. I'll tell you what. You take a possum fur. And you get just the fur, where his head's not involved, his feet aren't involved, his tail's not involved.
Like skinned?
Oh, beautiful fur.
Really?
You wouldn't believe it. The tail ruins it for people.
But oh,
just
yeah.
A possum fur is gorgeous.
What do you do? Do you sell it?
It's yeah, they're not valuable because their leather's too thin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so only like a really good... I was just talking with this with Seth earlier. If you can flesh a possum, you can flesh anything.
Really?
Very hard to not tear the hide on a possum.
Well, you definitely don't want to eat them, though, right? You didn't.
People eat them.
Really?
I never have.
Oh,
we used to
okay.
do a lot of possums because trapping fox, possums, a lot of possum bycatch.
But you didn't do anything with them? Or you
sell
just
them. It's just hard to flesh. You can sell them in the green, but then when you sell them in the green, they're like a dollar.
Oh, okay.
Because all the work is fleshing them.
Right.
But so you worked on that project. What else did you work on?
And then I went and I worked at a hatchery with Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Yeah. Yeah. It was just a fun little intern. It was internship.
Did you like
it was 3
it?
Months. You know, it was fun. I don't know what they, it's not, but when you pull out the eggs, I can't even remember what
milking
it's called.
Milking them?
Yeah. When you just like pull out the, you're like holding this huge fish and you're just squeezing these eggs out. I'm like, this is insane. You can like feel them all in their stomach. So that was pretty cool. And then I worked for Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Again, I did another internship, but ended up with a job working on black-tailed deer. And that was a lot of fun. We darted them or we set up clover traps and
clover traps.
Mm-hmm. It's like a big walk-in trap. And it's crazy, but they do. They wander in them. You just put a little bait pile in there, and it's there's a string hooked to the door, so it's got a door that goes up. And they when they cross, the string goes across on the bottom, and when they cross, like one of their legs cross, the door drops down.
They call it clover because it's clover shaped. Or you're baiting them with clover?
No, we're not baiting them with clover. I actually don't know where the name came from. I never really asked that.
But the trap isn't shaped like a clover.
No, it's just this big, and elk are bigger. They have bigger ones. But yeah, it's like the size, probably the size of this table, and then just kind of tall enough so deer can walk in, and then obviously elk are a little more bigger.
And then you're getting them in there with what, corn?
Yeah, we put down some corn. Yeah.
The hair trapping, catching hair, did you wind up doing more of the hair? Because you had hair work when you had your mix-up. You were doing grizzly bear hair studies.
Yeah, yeah, but that, aside from the pine marten and the grizzly bear stuff, is about the only thing I've done with hair. I mean, we collect hair off of bears that I captured in Florida. But yeah, other than that, I haven't really done a ton of hair snare stuff.
So being a wildlife biologist is tough. Tough because it's like all these like temporary jobs, right?
It is.
And they don't pay a ton of money.
No, they don't. Sometimes you get lucky, like Oregon actually pays super well. And if you can get in and network, and they're really great, and they're doing a ton of research. I actually just talked to one of my old bosses there, and he's got 7 research projects going on, a couple different elk projects, blacktail, whitetail. He's got a bear project, Fisher, and he might've said Martin or something. I mean, he's just got so much going on. So there are a lot of jobs, but they're super competitive. And like you said, they don't pay as well. And some places don't even offer housing. So when I work for Idaho Fish and Game, they don't really offer housing because they don't really have a lot of housing. But then they end up, you know, in the area, and they pay a little more, and I get to be a senior wildlife technician just because they don't, offer housing. So, I mean, some places balance out.
If you imagine all things, this is going to sound weird. I can't say all things being equal. Is it harder? Is it still harder to make it in that field as a woman than it is to make it in that field as a man? Or has it evened out because it's so many government agencies?
I say it's about evened out. I mean, a lot of my supervisors have been females, but I've also worked for a lot of males. And you in the department, especially in my office now, it's 50-50. Like, there's a lot of males, there's a lot of females, and I feel because of my work and everything that I have a lot of experience, and so they tend to. I mean, they base it off of experience. So yeah. I've never had an issue where I was like,
you feel like it's like in that field, there's like a meritocracy there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it's not like a bro culture.
I definitely think in some areas there can be, there's still that old time, I guess, bro culture, if you want to say. But yeah, I still think it's around, and I think it's probably something we're always going to have to deal with and work with. And I mean, some people are just set in their ways, and that's okay.
Yeah.
And honestly, it's just, that's fine. I'll take a challenge,
That's a good attitude to have. How many years had you been doing field work?
So 4.5 now, which is crazy.
Okay.
Yeah.
And all of it, like no full-time salaried stuff. It's just piecemeal.
Nope. Yeah. It's all been, let's see, the hatchery was 3 months, and that's the lowest one I've had. Other than that, they've been 5, 6, and then Idaho Fishing Game has been 8 months.
So how did it come to be, like lay out who you're working for, what you were doing when you got attacked?
So I was working for U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and University of Montana. So it was a cooperation between the two. And I was working in Libby, Montana.
What was the job?
The job was a grizzly bear hair snare DNA technician. So that's kind of a long title, but.
So you see this job come up where? Like, how'd you even become aware of the job?
Well, I've been trying really hard. Like, bears are my goal, and that's kind of what I really want to do and what I want to work with. And I knew somebody, he came to volunteer with us with Idaho Fishing Game, and he happened to hear through the grapevine that there was going to be a job because he had worked up in northern Idaho. And so he knew somebody who kind of knew somebody. He did a little bit of volunteering with my boss from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And so I met him doing some capture work, and he's like, oh, yeah, by the way, they're going to be posting a job, and just kind of gave me a heads up. And I believe, yeah, he gave me Wayne's number, and I just contacted Wayne and was like, hey, heard you guys are going to have some openings. Would love to, talk with you some more. And he sent me over the list and what they were going to have. It was trapping technician and then a DNA hair snare assistant. And so he sent me those over.
Like barrel trapping bears.
Foothold is what they use. Yeah. So I applied for both of those and did an interview, and they actually didn't. So, Texas A&M, a lot of things wind up on Texas. I don't know if you guys know. Yeah. It's a huge job board. And if it goes on there, I mean, it just goes insane. And they actually don't post anything on there. So everything they kind of send to the university. So U of M, MSU, and I think U of I is where they'll send, the job descriptions and everything. And so, yeah, so I was super fortunate and just really wanted to be in there. And then I got an interview, and yeah, they told me I got the job. So
how long were you working the job before you got attacked?
3 days.
Are you serious?
Yeah. I know.
Did you go into it? What am I trying to get? I'll get to that later. So you get the job, and what's day one look like?
So day one, we get to kind of everybody's there. So it's the trapping technicians. There's three biologists, and then there's three trapping technicians, and then there's three hair snare. And so we're all there, and we're just doing safety, going over all the just kind of rules, protocols, things that need to get done. We did chainsaw safety. And so that was 3 days of doing that. So the first day, kind of everybody was just getting in. We were getting to know each other. And then the next 2 days were just trainings And like our last day, the three of us, DNA, Hair Snare Techs, we went out and we just set up one just to kind of see if we had any questions or if there was anything that we needed to do. So we set up a corral and then set up a couple of hair, wind check some hair snares that were already out.
And what are you guys baiting grizzlies with?
So the trappers bait them with road deer. So anything, and then they kind of like mix them up. And that's what our, you know, when we do a corral in the center is we put a like lure. And so it's basically blood and from like roadkill animals that they've had mixed up and everything.
And then a little roadkill meat too.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like little chunks of it. And everything.
And are you pretty precise about where, like, are you, when you place the hair snare, are you trying to place it in really good, like a really good spot? Or you, do you place them like semi-randomly?
So the corrals are fairly random. Actually, the hair snares, most of them were already set out. So they've been, I mean, they've been doing this project for 10 years.
So you're coming
years.
In on a pre-existing project.
Yeah, so there's already stuff out there. But definitely I was looking for, so if there was a new fresh tree that had a ton of hair on it, I would definitely keep an eye out for new areas to maybe move the hair snare if nothing's active, you know, active on that tree.
If you found a new scratching tree or something.
Yeah, because it's just barbed wire that you cut. And so if I found something new that was looking better than the older one, I could move it. And some of the tree, I mean, they were just this tiny. They were super tiny. Just the diameter was so small. And there would just
like an inch diameter.
Yeah, they would be so tiny, but you could just see where the hair was. And it would just be, you would just wrap barbed wire around it. And yeah, there would be some hair there. And I'm like, how do they not break it? You know, but they're just kind of rubbing on it a little bit.
So you find rub trees that a grizzly liked to rub on that were an inch.
Grizzlies, black bears too. There's black bears out there. So we collect a lot of black bear hair too. Because I mean, you can't.
Yeah, you can't sort it out.
Yeah, yeah.
When you were training up, did they train you in, did you shoot some training cans of bear spray?
We did once, yeah, and I've done it before. So I've gone to a lot of the bee bear wear stuff and kind of shot the cans out there. And they definitely gave, I was like, you guys are giving us bear spray, right? And they said, yeah, oh yeah.
Did they give you the, because one of my brothers used to work for the state of Alaska through the university system. Mm-hmm. And their protocol was pump shotguns with slugs.
Oh, okay.
Was their protocol. Yeah. That was like what you were supposed to have with you. And he traveled everywhere. This is a while ago. Everywhere he went, they just carried a pump. He carried a pump shotgun.
No bear spray at all.
It had like a 24-inch barrel with slugs, and you carried a pump. That's like in Alaska with that community, that was what you did. Then when he switched to U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, it's optional.
Oh, any of it?
Spray, shotgun, pistol.
Really?
Yeah, taster's choice.
Oh, man. But you have to have one. It's not optional to have any.
You got to have one.
Oh, okay. Okay.
That's my understanding.
Okay.
You know, I take that back. I think that that's true, but I don't want to say that that's true.
Right.
But I know he started using more, carrying spray more.
Yeah.
Even though it's a hassle with flying and stuff, spray is a hassle.
Oh, they carried it. Well, I guess they're flying into remote
locations. Yeah, you always got to put an ammo can and strap it to the struts on helicopters.
Right.
Because no one wants to have one of those things rip loose in a cockpit.
Yeah. No, that wouldn't be ideal.
That's a death sentence. Yeah. You guys never talked about carrying shotguns or anything?
No, we didn't. And I don't even know if carrying a gun, I may have asked the question. I don't really carry a handgun. So we've always kind of carried bear spray. And
that's just standard protocol.
Yeah.
Is it mandatory to carry spray?
For them, yes.
Like in the role you were doing, it's mandatory to carry spray.
Yeah. Personally,
Where did you carry it? Where did you keep it?
I actually had it on my chest, so on my left. And right where that buckle meets, you know, on your left side.
And you just hang it off your backpack buckle.
Yeah. Yeah. I just have it right there. So it's kind of right near me. I don't know if that's the right place. I mean, every place is different.
I think it's a smart place.
Talking to you, you'd know better. But in my mind, what could be better than having it on your chest?
Well, you guys heard about the most recent attack in Ennis, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it sounded like maybe he had his on his hip. I don't know for sure.
I didn't read the report.
Oh, okay. But he did have bear spray, which is super awesome. But I was wondering how he was carrying his, if it was on his hip or if it was on, you know. Some people do. They carry them like right on their hip and it's just more convenient.
You know what we used to do with them? Put them in the bottom of your backpack.
I don't know.
So stupid. You know, we're always like, it's in the lid of my pack. You know, it's like, oh man.
I feel like you still see it all the time. Like on just the hiking trails around here, you'll see bear spray on the outside of a backpack. Sure, it's kind of reachable especially if you're a yogi and you're flexible, you can get to it a little bit easier. But still, But now what I do is the FHF harness has, what do they call that? Like the molly, whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
Those, some strips on the bottom. And you can attach his bear spray canister right underneath your binocular harness. So it's...
Is it Velcro or is it...
No, it's like the molly system, right? Where you have like... what'd you call that?
It's like woven nylon webbing.
Webbing. Oh, okay. And you have like tacks or, you know, tacked strips in a row. And you can, the harness or the holster has like a little belt that runs through there and then back into itself.
Okay.
He totes his hand cannon down there in the same place.
Yeah.
Yeah, so man. Right there.
One or the other.
Right there. You like, you got to get it where you can cross draw.
Well, I figure if you're in like a ball, right, or if you're in sort of a defensive fetal position, that's where your hands are going to be, is are going to be near your chest.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's. I mean, like I said, everybody puts it somewhere different. So it's just, I think it's the motion of being able to get it out. Because what if you can't? Because some of the times when you get those holders, even the ones that they have, yeah, they're super tight. So what if you can't get it out, you know?
That's a good point. So on the morning, on
hold
the
I got to, before we get there, I got a question. Because when I was reading through what you were doing, you just talked about catching bears and then tattooing bears.
Oh, yeah.
And I want to know how and why you tattoo a bear.
So I wasn't a part of trapping. So I only did the DNA stuff. But I did assist after my accident. I was going up to Libby to visit people, and they happened to have an augmented bear that was coming up. So lead foot to the ground. I was on my way up. But we tattoo them on either side in case they lose their... So sometimes the collars break off, fall off, or we take them off. Mm-hmm. And also we do put ear tags on them. So if the ear tags come out and the bear, or if the bear gets eaten and a lot of that stuff is gone, but the mouth is gone, then we can just flip that up and you can see the number on there. So we're basically... Oh,
so the tattoo's on the inside of their cheek.
Yeah. So you're pulling up, and we did this on black bears in Florida too. And so you're just pulling up their cheek and you feel kind of bad, but you're essentially, it's this tool and it has kind of, not nails, I don't want to call them that, but you're able to put ink on it and then you just stick it up under their lip and push it, and it creates holes, and it's a tattoo, and it's got like their number on it.
Yeah, so like an indelible mark that mm-hmm. someone can...
They'll have it forever.
Yeah.
Well, of course, unless so they lose their lips.
Some grizzly gets hit by a car out 100 miles away, you can tell that it was yours and he went that far.
Yeah, because sometimes they don't collar them or even ear tag them. Maybe they just captured it and they're going to move it or something. So they just, you know, a tattoo is easier if they're just going to relocate it.
I know they tattoo a lot of mountain lions when they relocate them too.
Do they?
Yeah, because I've heard like when people talk about when a mountain lion will turn up somewhere weird, you'll often read that they'll remark that it had no tattoo.
Interesting. On the outside?
I don't know where they tattoo them.
Interesting.
Because oftentimes when you have a problem animal and you relocate a problem animal, so you can sort of like look at recidivism, meaning is this problem animal a problem animal or is he just happen to be in a bad situation?
One-time offender.
Yeah. You can mark them, and then like the next time it destroys someone's chicken coop, next time it destroys Yanni's chicken coop, peel its lip back and be like, he's been in trouble before and he was in trouble here and he was in trouble here. And then, you know, you got a bear that's just... not gonna, or a lion or whatever, that's not gonna stay clear.
Right, which makes it easy too for, and then, because sometimes when you ear tag things, I think people get a little nervous and it kind of, they're like, well, this thing's ear tagged, is it a problem? And so then when you just do a tattoo, then you kind of know, and if there's any issues, because you don't want to hate to scare the public or make them nervous, you know.
But was the bear that got you tattooed?
He was
tattooed.
Number 770.
Old 770.
Which, how cool is that?
Yeah. 770.
He's an original cabinet bear. He's 24 years old. Well, he'll be 25 this year. So
you got attacked by a 24-year-old grizzly.
Yeah.
So what happened? Like, lay out that day for me. So you got to go out and check the hair snares by yourself.
Yes.
Did they give you GPS coordinates? Like, how do you know where to go?
Yeah. So they give us a map. So we have a couple different maps, and then we have a GPS that, and we also have a tablet, I guess. I don't use those very often, but they gave us that. I'm like, what am I going to do with this? Where is it? And they're like, just use it. I'm kind of a little old fashioned.
A digital map.
Yeah. Instead. Like a tablet and everything. And I was like, man, this is fancy. Cause I don't really get, it's very rare you get those in my job, you know, cause those are pretty expensive. But so they gave me a tablet and everything and had an inReach. So all the gear that I needed. And yeah, I was just...
So you go out with the inReach, which you know how to use.
Mm-hmm.
You got your tablet.
With the maps and all the points on them and the GPS.
And the GPS. Yeah. You know how to use that.
Yeah.
And your pepper spray and you know how to use that.
Yeah.
And you strike off up the trail.
Oh, yeah. So.
How far did you walk?
2 miles. About 2 miles.
To your first hare snare.
No. That was, I had already collected maybe at least 6.
Oh.
Yeah. So start.
So you'd been out knocking around already.
Yeah. So it'd been a couple hours. I usually started my day at 7:30, just because it took a while to drive. It was, you know, a little far out outside of Libby, like 10 or 15 miles. Then you got to drive up all the back roads. And then my second day, I spent most of the day chainsaw, just using a chainsaw because there was just trees everywhere. And I was so irritated. But so yeah, my third day, I'm just walking along. And like I said, I'm checking all the trees.
What kind of area are you in? Like, what's it look like?
A lot of trees. So complete national forest area, just trees.
Heavily timbered.
Yeah, yeah, just a ton of trees. And there's a huge river. It's Poor Man's Creek, and it was roaring just the entire time from all the snow melt. May 17th.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you cutting trails with your chainsaw or cutting open the road?
Actually, road.
Open the road.
Yeah, because, I mean, we're there so early. And yeah.
No one's cleared everything yet in the winter.
Which I was actually shocked because somebody had drove down at one point, but then they decided to turn around. I was like, gosh darn it. I spent 3 hours on the second day.
Just sawing your way up the road.
Yeah. I was so mad. And then I had, I don't know, it was a 16-mile hike in. So, and that's 60 miles both ways. So I finished doing that, and then I had to go in 60 miles, and I'm setting up this corral. So this is day two, but setting up this corral, and I'm just cursing up a storm because it was not functioning with me the way I wanted it to. So, of course, I'm yelling, too, just in case a bear, because I'm literally back in this super tight area, just a lot of trees, and I'm looking around, and finally get done, and I'm heading out, and I'm making a ton of noise. I'm just like, oh, this is so dumb, and just like thinking about all the things I could have done differently to just do better. And all of a sudden, I just hear this, all these trees, and just this motion. And I was like, got down, pulled out my bear spray, and it just happened to be a black bear like running across the ridge.
Really?
And I just scared him.
That's day two.
Yeah, that was day two. So I'd already been running into bears, you know. But yeah, I scared him because he was eating on some berries and everything. And yeah, he took off.
Was it a nice bear?
He was a nice bear. He was small, but he was still, I mean, color, just jet black. And then I saw a couple more that day, too.
Really?
Yeah. You know, in that area.
Unrelated to the bait.
Yeah. Yeah. Not even, one of them ran right in front of my truck.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a bear-rich zone, man.
Oh, man. Libby is such an amazing area. Yeah. Love that area.
So, but, day three.
Yeah. So, I'm walking along the trail and, like I said, making a ton of noise and just checking. Like I said, I think there were 6, maybe 8.
Positioned along a footpath or?
So it's an old forest road, but a ton of like new growth had come up. So there was, like I said, those 1-inch, 2-inch, smaller trees, but they're super tall. But there's a path in there from people kind of hiking in and out. And you can tell it's an old forestry road.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Nobody
can overgrown. Drive it. Yeah. Yeah. And just walking along and just grabbing hair. And then I get to the one creek, the loud creek, and I was like, oh man, and I had to cross a bridge and everything, and I just kept thinking, I'm like, man, this is really loud. I got to start yelling a lot louder because it was just rushing, and you could run into them, and there's so many moose out there, which I was dying to find a moose shed, but that didn't really work out. So yeah, I just kept going and got to there. I hit some snow, and at one point, you know, my boss told me, he's like, if you hit a bunch of snow, you don't have to keep going. Just, we can go back to it in the next week. It'll eventually be melted. But I was already walking, and it was just on the trail. So it was.
Do you have snowshoes?
No. But I mean, it was a foot high, maybe a foot and a half. So, but I was walking along, and
it's kind of miserable in the spring though, when it gets all soft and you sink down in it and it's all wet.
Oh, it makes me so mad. Yeah. I didn't even think about snowshoes. But like I said, it was just on the trail so I could kind of get off of it. And I actually found grizzly bear tracks on the snow and look down, and I'm looking at them. I was like, oh, they're a couple days old. Wasn't super worried. Had they been fresh, I probably would have, turned around, you know, just cause he was walking the same way I was walking, and he or she, I should say, and got to my last hare snare and was taking some photos. And then,
was there any hair in it?
Yeah, there was a little bit. Yeah. There was some
grizz hair or black bear hair?
Both.
Both.
Yeah. Yeah. So you got to kind of collect everything. And so there was a little bit of both. There wasn't enough to where I was like,
so you don't make an in-field analysis about what it is. You just grab it.
Yeah, we just kind of, I try to, so we separate it by barb that's on the, it's not literally the barbs that are on the wire. So kind of, you know, there's like 101, 102, 103. So we separate them by those, and we have different envelopes. And then when we come back, you go through the hair to determine black bear, grizzly bear. Yep. And you can kind of determine out there, but sometimes, I mean, you're out there for so long, it's just easier to do it at, in, back in the office.
I'm surprised you're getting both hairs on the same tree.
Why is that?
Well, just because in the field, when we've seen the both blacks and brown bears on the landscape, it's like when that black bear realizes there's a grizzly in the area, they just hightail it.
Well, they've got to pass at some point, though, right?
You see, yeah, but sure, yeah, but they must smell that a grizzly's been rubbing on that tree, and I would think that
being subordinate,
they'd always be like, nah. Don't need to cause any friction.
You can look up and see them together, but yeah, a little bit like that. If he was in the zone and hanging around and scratching it up, that the black bear would be a little apprehensive.
Yeah, I guess I didn't even think about that. I just figured, they're walking the same path, and maybe he smelled it, and he's like, well, I'm going to rub on this tree too, and just kept walking, you know?
You know, they do, like on the islands in coastal Alaska, they don't overlap.
Really?
On the islands.
I didn't know that.
If it's suitable for brown bears, black bears aren't there.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Black bears are on an island, it's because it's not suitable habitat for grizzlies or brown bears.
Wow, that's super interesting.
Yeah.
I actually love Alaska. I'd love to do some bear work.
They in the interior, they overlap, but they still, you know, I mean, the grizzlies will kill them.
Right, right. Oh, yeah, I saw this video on Facebook that somebody posted.
Did you see that? One of the grizzly killing the black bear cubs.
Oh my God. Man, I could.
That sound.
Oh, it was brutal. Isn't it?
Dude, that video gave me nightmares.
Really?
I watched it like too many times.
How many times do you watch it?
I haven't seen it.
It's digging out the den, fighting with the ma.
Oh, and she's just, you see her and she's like, whack. And she just whacks that. And he's still.
He just like doesn't. He's like, lady, I do not care.
Yeah.
I do not
care. Does he kill the sow black bear?
No, he's not interested in her.
Really?
He's like, I'm in here for the cubs.
To eat them?
Yeah.
And she's like fighting, and he just is so unbothered by it.
Doesn't even affect it.
No, he's like, I'm just here for one thing, man. I want your cubs.
Which, whoa. Two
he
of
doesn't,
them.
He doesn't care.
Three cubs, right?
Two of them live. Survive. One of them break. One of them is
went
nerves.
The other way.
One of them, he loses his nerves and busts out of the den. And the sound and how long the sound goes on. And that's a stout freaking grizzly,
yeah,
man.
Oh, yeah. He was.
And the hard part about it is the two dudes filming it kind of, like, it detracts from the video.
Yeah.
They're speculating.
Yeah.
What's that dude that does all the narration for nature movies? Attenborough?
Yeah.
They're not David Attenborough. Okay, so there you are. You're out. You check a few snares. You see some grizzly tracks. Was it a whopper? The track?
They were pretty big. I don't know if I've ever, I mean, you go to Yellowstone, you see big grizzly bears, but they were big to me. You know, they seemed pretty big.
You know what a good rule of thumb is?
Please tell me.
Well, I want you to verify it.
Oh.
You measure the front pad.
Oh, is it from the corner to like the...
Just the width of the front pad.
Just the top part.
Add an inch. And that'll tell you roughly nose to tail, what the hide will stretch out. Not stretch out, but what it'll square out as.
Oh, really?
That's a Duncan Gilchrist trick.
Okay.
So if you find a black bear, he's got a 5-inch pad. He's probably about a 6-foot bear.
Really? Okay. That's good to know.
But I don't know if that works on grizz. I know that he talks about it working on black bears. And now he's used it as a rough estimate.
For grizzlies?
With grizzlies, yeah.
Interesting.
But it might be off. They might have a proportionately larger foot.
Yeah. Well, and two.
They got proportionately larger claws, that's for sure.
Are there tracks? Different, like how do they, and depending on how they step in the snow and stuff too, you know,
like a black bear's got more of a dog like deal,
right,
where the toes don't fall in a real straight line,
right,
but the grizzly's toes fall in a pretty straight line, and then obviously the claw mark will stick out an inch and a half, 2 inches out.
No, it was definitely grizzly tracks.
So you see him and you go like, wow, there's one back in here.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was, I mean, I had been finding wolf tracks, black bear tracks, moose tracks, everything. So I see him. I was like, oh, that's super cool. There was one. Yeah, there was one back here. So I keep walking and I get to this kind of avalanche chute area. It's pretty open. And
Remember an avalanche shoots coming down off the hill, down toward the trail?
Yeah. Yeah. And just, it's super open, not as, not as many trees and more like bushes and things like that in there. Just walking down the trail and I'm, you know, I made some noise. I blew my whistle and just was looking to the right and looking around.
Headed to another location.
Yeah. So I was moving down the trail, just going to, I think I had maybe four or five more hair snares to pick up. And I just heard this, oh, and I turned to my left and they ended up measuring it. He was about 11 feet from me on my left hand side.
Walked in 11 feet from him.
Yeah.
Because he's so old, he doesn't know what's going on anymore.
I don't know if he didn't hear me, if he was laying down or if he, because of the ridge, it dropped off and the ridge was right there. There was maybe a foot, maybe 2 feet on the left hand side, and then it dropped off down to the creek.
Okay.
So I don't know if he was
on the downhill
up.
Or uphill. Oh, I got
yeah,
you.
Yeah. So I don't, I think
so. It wasn't like, it was like a somewhat obstructed view in that direction.
Yeah. Yeah. So I, like I said, he might have been laying down or he was coming up as I was coming down and just didn't hear me and I didn't see him.
And he
time.
Woofed.
Yeah. He was just a woof.
And was he already motoring your direction?
He was 11 feet for me, so he really didn't have to go very far.
But when you first registered him, he was stationary or coming?
No, he was standing right there like, what? Excuse me. What are you doing here?
At 11 feet.
Yes. Yeah, no, he was right next to me.
On all fours or up on his hind?
On all fours.
Not looking happy.
I mean, he was just, I don't know if I would say that. He just was like, didn't know what I was, you know?
He didn't have a real expression on his face.
Were his ears cocked back?
A little bit, you know, I don't even know if I, a little bit, but nothing like, you know, what that would normally do.
How many pounds was the bear?
So when they first captured him in 2005, I believe, and I also brought his family tree, which is super cool. I wanted to know everything.
Oh man, I
want
to know everything about it.
Yeah. So they captured him originally in 2005 and he was, I think they put this in kilograms, 250 kilograms, I believe they put that in. Oh, the whole thing. But anyway, he ended up being originally 550 pounds. And so, I mean, you figure what, 13 years? How long has it been? Last year?
He's 24.
Yeah. So he had to have been, I knew it was springtime, but he had to have been at least 600 pounds. I mean, he had to have gained some weight, you would think. So I would say he was probably at least 600 pounds.
And how well did you register it? Like how well was it, just when you review it in your mind now, was it like a blur? Was it like you just can remember every detail of the face?
I can remember every detail. They showed me a picture. They sent me a picture of him when he was originally captured. And I was like, oh yeah, that's him. Yeah.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah. You could have picked him out of a police lineup of bears.
Oh yeah. Cause he's a little darker. He's got kind of a darker tone in his hair and just the face. I mean, I don't know what it was. His face is engraved in my mind.
Had he been in a lot of trouble in his life?
No. No. He was not a trouble bear at all.
He's born there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's an original cabinet bear. Yep. So he's been popping out cubs and not him, but he's been
siring cubs.
Yes. Yeah.
So all of a sudden 11 feet away, and then did you stay on it? Locked on it to see him start to lunge, or did you kind of turn away and know somehow sense that it was coming?
I sensed that it was coming. I was so close to him that there was no way he wasn't going to come at me. And so my first initial reaction, which is kind of what they tell you not to do, but I mean, how often do people when a bear's right there?
Listen, don't apologize.
Okay.
All of the things about, oh, you're supposed to do this when you're do this. It's like all that stuff goes out the door.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, who's got that great saying? I think it's Tyson, maybe, saying that says that like everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the mouth.
Oh, is that right? Yeah, everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the mouth. I think that's what it is.
That's a good saying.
A friend of ours who ran one of the SEAL training, Navy SEAL training courses. Like that's the thing is we talked about this where you can rehearse something and practice something. You can eventually get to a point where when it's real, you've done it so much when it's not real in very real seeming situations that you can function when it's real.
Really?
But it's hard to get there.
Yeah.
And you being like, oh yeah, if a bear comes for me, I used to joke that I was going to grab his upper jaw and lower jaw and spread his mouth out so he couldn't bite. A joke. But I'm saying like, there's no way.
Yeah. Well, I love when all my guy friends are, you know, and this was prior to everybody, all guys are like, oh, I could fight off a bear. I'm a bear fighter. And yeah, I've had a lot of guys say that to me. And, you know, now this has happened. And they're like, I don't think I'm as tough as you. And I was like, I don't know. Well, it is what it is. Yeah.
So you just, but you just knew.
Oh, yeah. Knew. I mean, just instantly. I just had a feeling. And
what was the feeling?
I just knew he was coming at me.
Dread?
No, I didn't. There was no time for fear. There was no time to
just realization.
Yeah. And I was like, this is it. I'm going to figure this out and I'm going to survive. Like my thought process was I'm getting out of here. And I did everything that I could. So I ended up, you know, when I heard him, saw him, I mean, this is second. So all took so much time. I turned to the right and like got by a bush and just dropped down to the ground before I was even down all the way. I mean, he was already at my back and I had a pack on. He had smacked my back, clawed up my arm. And I, you know, I had my bear spray here, but my thought process was he's not going to tear up my guts. Like I'm walking out of here. And so that's why I turned and just dropped like as much as I could. And I'm just on the ground and just trying not to move any muscle in my body, getting this bear spray out. And I finally got it out and had the cap off. And I'm literally like this.
Over what period of time? A split second.
Oh, this is like 3 seconds between him coming there. It might have even been a second. I mean,
the first physical
second.
Contact felt like him blowing you with his arm.
Oh, he did. Yeah, I thought I broke a rib when I was walking out. Like, I thought he essentially broke my rib.
He hit you that hard?
Oh, yeah, because he just came up and whacked me and just like clawed up my arm. And I was like, I'm just working on
Where
getting
on
that
your
bear
arm?
Spray. My right arm, so on the back.
Did it make it through your clothes?
It did. You know, I had three layers on, I believe three long sleeve layers on, and I got a rain jacket, and then I had this Columbia long sleeve shirt on, and then I had another just kind of like a thinner, must have been a short sleeve shirt on, but still they were all fairly long. But yeah, it made it through, and there's actually tears in my rain jacket, and then on my right side of my back, so right below like my shoulder blade kind of area, there's still a scar and everything. So he made it through that, and I had a pack on, like I had a huge Osprey pack on. And he still somehow was a, I mean, the
punctured
bruise.
Punctured all that stuff.
Yeah, the bruise was huge. I mean, how he made it through. And there's even a gash on my pack on the top part of that, you know, that top part. There was a gash on that. I was like, how did he even do that?
Like, you think about they can run behind an elk and swat the elk's rump and topple the elk.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, you could cock back as hard as you could ever hope to cock back and punch an elk in the rump and it will not register the blow.
No, right? Wouldn't even know. Yeah. It's like, you make
the fact
a bruise
that like,
the size
swipe
of a penny.
Swipe its legs out from underneath it with a blow of that arm.
It's insane.
So you feel that. And were you like, oh, I just got whapped or cut or clawed, or did it just feel like this overwhelming kind of blow?
Oh, I mean, I knew he hit me. I was like, all right, I'm gonna keep going. Like, I'm gonna pull this bear spray out.
You already got it in your head to get your spray.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was working.
You're like focused.
Yeah, I was working on it and I just was trying not to move these arms at all.
Because of what reason?
Well, because he was on top. So he was right there. And so any movement and they see that.
Oh,
they just want
to like
grab you.
Trying to play dead.
Yeah, yeah. So
or
I'm
play
just
like
trying,
not threatening.
Yeah, I'm just trying not to move. And that part was where I was like, all right, just pull it out, just do it. And then I took that, you know, that clear cap off, and that's when
the safety.
Yeah, the safety. And that's when he had reached over and bit down on my head, and I just reached over my left arm, sprayed him, and he took off.
Sprayed him over your shoulder while he's biting your head.
Over my shoulder, yeah.
And you got yourself?
I did, yeah. So it actually, I mean, because he was on my pack.
Like, were you on your knees?
Yeah, so I was sitting on my butt and just kind of had my legs out to the side.
Oh, you wound up on your butt, like with your legs out?
I did, yeah. How? I just ended up down there, but yeah.
And he bites your head.
He does.
Is that the first bite?
Yeah, that was
God, it's like you knew what he was
luckily,
doing, man.
And the only bite, which is crazy because I had fruit snacks and all kinds of stuff in that top part. You think he would have gotten into the top part of the bag and or like pulled the, but he was just, I don't know what it was.
Neutralizing a threat.
Yeah, and he just kind of went over and it wasn't, because I've had people ask me, what was the bite? And I was like, he just bit down on my head. And I mean, I literally didn't feel anything. I heard stuff crunch and then the hearing went out of my left ear, but I was so, like I said, I was going to get out. So I just literally reached over, sprayed him and he,
could see
I
see him
felt
or
him
just shot blind.
Nope. Just shot blind, closed my eyes, sprayed. And I felt him come off of me and he went away. And that was it.
It's so what was the, your hearing went out
right away, instantaneously.
And it was replaced by like a whee.
Yeah, like static noise. Yep.
So what was the wound? Did he make it through your skull?
He did. So one of his canines actually punctured my brain. So went into my brain. By the way, the doctor, and she's pretty sure, she goes, it had to have been. By the way, it was shaped, everything ended up going into my brain. And so from kind of just below my eye on my left side, and then it wraps around, and there was a decent hole on this side, and then it goes all the way to the back, and I had staples all the way just right before my right ear on the back side. So this whole, you know, your back of your head, that whole lower part where all that muscle tendons were all shredded, like all that stuff was shredded.
So did he bite it like crosswise or like?
That was my next question.
I honestly don't know. So I also got, I had about 6 staples on the top of my head. So there was some kind of scrape. So I think maybe the top part might've been like his upper right canine. Uh-huh. And then this side was the left side of his mouth. And then probably the back side was his bottom jaw. And he was literally just like, so I think he was kind of on his side.
Like a 45 degree sort of angle.
Yeah.
Wrapped around your, like fit your head in his mouth.
Oh yeah, essentially. Yeah.
You heard a crunch?
Yeah, I did.
Did you like, oh, there's my skull?
Honestly, I didn't know. I was so focused on getting him off of me. I thought, but I wasn't for sure. Like I assumed it was my skull because I was like, what else would it have been? But I didn't know that it had cracked open all the way. I mean, you hear it, and then, like I said, it was white noise in my ear and all this static. And so after that, I didn't really think about it. Like I just,
with all those tendons gone, did you notice that your head was hard to hold or move? Or
I didn't. I tried not to move my head too much, just because I like I said, I wasn't sure that what he cracked open and what he, but I knew that he had touched my head. So I just tried not to move my head, but it was hard walking out because I walked.
You put
out.
Your hand back there to see how much blood there was?
No. At one point, so I had a hat on too, mind you, and I had super long hair. So my hair was super long all the way down to my lower back, and I had a ponytail in and had a hat on, and I hadn't even found, I was walking out and my hat happened to fall out of my hair, and I was like, oh, that's my hat. That's really weird. So I picked it up and put it on, and then, I don't know, I was just walking out. Like, I just
didn't. Why did you not check to see if it was all super bloody?
I didn't want to know.
You know what's funny? This is like, nah, I shouldn't even be telling this story because your story is cool and this isn't. I was in a car rollover one time and I had just bought a coffee.
Oh.
And when the car got done rolling over, my head was all hot.
Oh, from the coffee?
And I was like, oh, my head cracked open and that's all my blood. And then I touched it and looked and there's no blood. And I was like, oh, that's weird. And I touched it. And I'm like, oh, it's that coffee. And I was like, totally fine.
Oh, well, that's
but
good.
For a minute, I had like the feeling of my life blood.
Oh, yeah, all the blood
flowing.
Running out of you.
And I was like, oh, there's actually nothing wrong with me.
Well, at least you didn't get any burns from the coffee. And that's what I would be worried about.
So you don't put your hand back there. But it had been bleeding bad, right?
Probably.
Okay, I mean,
are you
later,
in shock?
Is your whole jacket and everything just soaked through?
You know, honestly, I really don't know. So when
you lost all your gear?
No, it was all with me. So I still had my pack. I still had everything.
I mean,
literally
after the hop.
Oh yeah, so they cut. So they were able to. Well, that's not true. They were able to take my rain jacket off, and they just kind of took everything from me, like the rest of my clothes. They had, essentially had a cut off of me.
So how many stitches and staples?
I had. Oh, I used to know the number.
We're getting too far ahead. I want to know how far the walk out was.
2 miles. So
and
I
are you in shock?
No, I don't know about that. I mean, I almost didn't hit the inreach, hit the SOS, because I was fine and I could see. And so I'm literally sitting there and I sat there.
You got pepper spray in your face?
Yeah. Well, and I couldn't really tell right away, but I could definitely feel it.
Burning.
And I didn't
you.
Know for sure. But I just sat there for a couple seconds just waiting. And then I was like, okay.
Like waiting for him to come back and maul
you
again.
Yeah. To see if he was going to come back, and he wasn't coming back. So I just looked around and I pulled out my in reach and I'm like, God, this is my third day. Do I really hit the SOS button on your third day? You know? And I was like, well, what if I end up not being able to make it out? And I was like, I guess I'll hit it. But I literally debated it for at least probably 5 to 10 seconds.
Like, okay. So here's what I'm talking about. You debated it. Like, now it seems funny that you debated it because you weren't in your right mind, or you debated it like a rational person.
No, it was definitely rational. Just because it was my third day, and who wants to call the SOS? And granted, like, this was probably, this was a decent size injury, but who wants to, it's your third day and you're already hitting the SOS button. You're like, oh man.
So you didn't register it as something that kind of life changing.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, when I walked out of there, I was like, I'll be back to work in a month. I didn't really think I was going to not be able to go back to work for 4 or 5 months,
yeah,
which isn't long. I mean, that's what I mean. It was pretty bad what happened, but I'm super fortunate to have healed up as much as I have and everything.
So. Oh, not be dead.
Yeah. Could have been a lot worse.
Yeah. You're like,
yeah. Cause he could have added probably 20 pounds or who knows how many pounds of pressure taken and crushed your skull altogether. And
yeah. Which it was very, and it was light.
Or you could have had your pepper spray in a stupid place.
Yeah, well, that's why I said I don't know if I had it in the right. Maybe I didn't. Maybe I mean.
How can you argue?
Yeah, how do you? Everybody puts it in a different place, and like you said, you practice and everything, but until you're actually in the situation, and I always knew I was going to run into, because I've run into black bears, so I always figured I would see a grizzly, even though there's not a ton up in the Cabinet Yak area. There's still quite a few bears, so I always knew I would run into them. Never once did I think that one would be 11 feet for me.
What was the walk out like?
So it was mainly just me just trying to focus. And I, you know, they say that you can use 911 when you don't have service. Because in Libby, you go on the force, you don't have service.
Through satellite.
Yeah, and it wasn't working. And I don't know if that's because I had a ton of trees and everything. But I had hit the inReach, and I was literally just messaging anybody I could, just trying to remember. And I was looking around, and I yelled pretty much the entire time. And I only had...
Were you yelling?
Oh, I was just... cussing and yelling and screaming bear. I was literally yelling anything.
To try to keep the bear away or try to alert help?
No, to keep any more bears or moose from coming my way. That's the other thing.
You're just like, done. You're done for the day.
Yes. Yeah. I turned around. I was like, yeah, I'm going to step out just in case, you know. So it was just me. I was like, I'm going to make it out. And I just kept walking and just yelled and made as much noise as possible. And I mean, I just screamed my lungs off, which... At the time, I didn't really feel anything, but towards, you know, the end, once I got to surgery and everything, my head was just throbbing. But when I was getting down to that bridge, because it's so loud down there, I just kept thinking, oh, please don't let another bear be down here. Just let me get out, because I didn't have a second can of bear spray. So I only had maybe a half an inch, if that. I barely had any bear spray left. But I've got that in my hand, and I've got my inReach in my hand, and I'm just yelling and screaming, and if I can, whacking trees with whatever, and... cursing up a storm, like, this is my third day. And I thought, I was literally like, I better find a moose shed out here right now. You know, just doing anything I can to just get myself out.
Were you hauling ass, or were you going slow?
No, I was walking pretty fast, as fast as I could. So my balance was thrown off a little bit. I could see and I could hear for the most part out of my right ear, my good ear, but my balance was kind of thrown off some. So I was like, because he bit me on the side, I guess, where your balance is and everything. And so they've been super worried about that. And so I was off balance and could tell, like, I was a little off. So I kind of had to, like, spread my legs a little bit and walk in a different way. But I was walking as fast as I could just to get – I needed to get out of there.
And you got to your truck or car?
I got to my truck. So we had work trucks that they gave us. And I took off my pack and put everything in there. And I actually – took out a snack, and I was like, well, they're probably not going to let me eat at the hospital, so I better eat something. Got in my truck, and I looked in the rear view, and I was like, no, I don't need to see that. Started it up.
What'd you see in the mirror?
My eyes.
Oh, you didn't, like, examine.
No.
I got you.
So when I was walking out, you know, you're talking about blood and everything. My nose was running like crazy, and that's about the only thing that I could tell.
Running blood? Or
no, it was just draining because, you know, my ear had been and everything and where he had bit me. So it was just draining. And I was like, that's super weird. So I didn't know why. And then.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah, it was really weird. And that's about the only thing. And
so
like
you were like tempted to look, but just didn't want to look.
Yeah. No, because I was like, well, I mean, animal blood I'm good with. People blood I'm fine. Like, I give blood and everything. But I was like, you know, just in case. I don't need to pass out or anything. So I just started the truck up,
yeah,
put it in reverse, and got out. I just started driving out there. And like I said, I'm on an old
Force.
Did you
feel like you were driving normal? Like you were able to drive normal.
Yeah. Yeah. For the most part, I, it was a little tough. Like I was sitting a little higher, sitting a little closer, just trying to make sure, rolled down my windows and just started honking my horn. Cause I was like, there's going to be somebody here. And I literally just laid on my horn. And then when I finally got to, cause I was on an old forestry road there too, I had kind of stopped. And once I finally got onto the main road, which was all dirt, I was literally, gunned it a little more, and I was just honking like crazy, looking for anybody, because I figured there would be a bear hunter, somebody out there. And I ended up, I don't know, I probably drove for 3 or 4 miles and ended up running into somebody, and he was way ahead of me, and he's got this huge dog in his truck, and I'm pretty sure it was a bull mastiff, and the dog is hanging out of the passenger seat like, hey, we should probably pull over, Dad. Hey, what are you doing? You know, and he's just hanging on the seat, and I'm honking my horn, trying to get him to pull over. Finally, he pulls over. I pull over and I get out and put the truck in park, get out, and I just walk up to him. I'm like, excuse me. And he looks at me and goes, oh dear, are you okay? I said, I got attacked by a grizzly bear. Could you maybe take me to the local hospital? And he goes, of course. And I went and turned off the truck, rolled off all the windows, locked the truck, put my keys in my pocket, and I went and got in the back seat. He goes, I'm sorry, my dog's probably just going to love on you. And he's like trying to hold him back. And he was a retired veteran and everything. So he had been in the military, super nice. And he's just talking to me and just trying to keep me, you know, he's talking about stuff, but I could
barely hear him.
He didn't
try to administer any first aid.
Nope. He's like, no, I'll get you there. He's like, and I was like, I hit my inReach, but I'm not sure if they're coming. Like, I had no idea if anybody was coming. I mean, you hit that SOS button and they kept sending me texts like, are you okay? And I'm like, no, I'm not okay. Like, I hit that. How am I going to text you? I don't even have you know? And so I was super frustrated with that. And so he kind of knew what was going on, and he was just trying to get me there, and just, you could tell he was changing the subject.
He doesn't inspect you.
No.
Because you were talking it up.
Because I think that enough, and like I said, I hit the inReach, so I think he thought that the ambulance was probably coming, you know? So, but
how many minutes had gone by now?
Gosh, so it took me an hour and a half, maybe hour and 45 minutes to get back down to my truck.
Okay.
So it had probably been almost 2.5 hours
still
by
no
the time.
Ambulance.
We went for about a mile and a half in the ambulance. We were like running into the, and he's waving them down. And then he finally pulled over and he's like, I got her. And they pulled over and everything. And I got out and
And what was their take on this? What'd they do?
Oh, what? I guess what they're supposed to do. They're just like, okay, you got to take off your jacket. Okay. Cutting off your shirt. And they just start, okay, we're going to have to take off your, you know, all your clothes. Like, let's get you in. And they're just looking me over and everything. And then they finally like, they're asking me what happened and everything. And I was like, well, I was out there. Are you sure it was a grizzly bear? Yes, it was a grizzly bear. I know it was I was like, I know my bears. And they got me in there. And then I believe the sheriff and two other guys showed up while I was in the ambulance. And they were asking me questions and about kind of what happened and everything. And I just told them where it was. And they actually, I think, believe it was that day, they ended up sending, I don't know, at least 11 people up there to just kind of do a search to see if the bear had come back. And they have this whole protocol that they go through. And they ended up collecting hair, and that's how they were able to determine which bear it was.
How was the decision made? How was the decision made to not kill the bear?
Well, because I think...
you didn't press charges.
No, because it wasn't...
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, usually when a bear gets someone, it's a dead bear.
I don't know. And I don't know all the stories and I don't know the whole protocol, but I do know, I mean, they did ask me and I was like, well, it wasn't predatorial. We just happened to run into each other and
so
he wasn't there.
You advocated for the bear.
Yeah. Cause I mean, that's so, I don't want him to die. I mean, it was so random and so rare, and the bear spray worked. So I think that has a whole play in it too. So he attacked me and something happened, but I survived and the bear spray worked, and he's not a troubled bear. So they rarely see him except for the DNA stuff. And so there's no other issues with him. I mean, there's no really reason to kill him, you know?
Yeah.
So he's a first offense kind of bear, which sounds, I guess it doesn't sound terrible, but at the same time, it's like, who's to say that it's going to happen again? I mean, it was just such a rare occurrence, you know? So, well.
But you were involved in the discussion.
They did ask me and I told them, I don't know if I was involved, but I did tell them I didn't want them to kill it. Like I was like,
how did
no
they
reason.
Put the question to you?
Oh gosh. Well, I was, I wasn't even in surgery, and they just kind of asked me. They asked me what happened, and they said, "Do you think it was predatorial?" And I said, "No." I said, "We just ran into each other. Like, it was just wrong place, wrong time." Yeah. And then they kind of make the final decision. Like I said, the fact that he didn't come back to the site, wasn't searching or wasn't still there trying to find me, I think plays a big role in it, you know.
And what was his name?
770, but I call him Rat Bastard. Am I allowed to say that?
Oh, yeah, you can say that. That's cool. That's in this
case. I mean, I didn't want him to die, but he's still, you know, he still made me a little upset.
Right. you weren't exactly running at him. He could have just turned and walked away.
It's not like you hauled off and punched him.
Right. Yeah. I wasn't asking for his food, whatever he was digging for, you know.
What was the surgery? They had to put your skin back together.
Skin, skull, bones, kind of everything.
What did they do to your skull? Put a little plate in there?
They actually put, so there's a bunch of screws and kind of, they call them dog bones, but they're bands or plates. And there's just a bunch in my left side, and then there's a bunch in the back on my left, behind my ear. And yeah, there was a bunch of broken pieces of my skull because, you know, he had punctured my brain and everything. And then they had to cut kind of like a moon shape on the left side of my skull just so that they could put the other pieces back together and then kind of put it all back together. So there's like plates. They call them bones, but they look like bands. So it's just like screw, band, screw, screw, band, screw. And it's just keeping all the pieces and everything together. So
how much time did you spend in the hospital?
Only a week.
Huh.
Yeah, so that wasn't too bad.
Now, what have you noticed from, like, because you punched into your brain? Do you notice differences now?
I don't. I was super fortunate that, I mean, I was a little nervous I was going to lose something when she told me that.
And then someone tells you that?
Memory.
You got to, like, start looking at yourself in a new way, like, expecting some, or hoping you don't find some, like, I remember a buddy of mine, you know, he'd crash his bike real hard.
Mm-hmm.
And had amnesia and was hospitalized. And he would later, he'd be like, I'm totally fine. But now and then I'll be tying a knot, a fishing knot or something like that.
Yeah.
I'm like, I know that I know this knot.
Oh, you just can't.
Did I normally forget it or is it related?
Right.
Because I knew this. I've tied this 100 times. Why can't I remember?
Yeah.
And he was always like trying to find out what was just normal and what, you know, like what's normal and what's that, you know?
Well, you hate to sit around and think like that, but I have lost a few things out in the woods. And I was wondering the other day, I was like, did I lose my, and I don't even know what that would be, your lost and found common sense out in the woods. Cause I've lost a couple of knives where one, I had it in my rain jacket pocket and I just walked a couple of steps and I was out in the snow and it fell out. And so I couldn't find it. It had just like gone deep in the snow. And then at one point I lost a water bottle and a flannel and another knife. And I was like, what the heck is going on with me?
Well, listen, you know? Steve's brother has not been bitten in the head by a bear. And that dude, he's got to bring out like 4 sets of clothing when he goes out for a week-long elk hunt.
So you don't feel like everything moves normal?
Yeah, I'm still in recovery. I mean, it'll be a year in May, and I'm still in recovery, and definitely hiking is definitely a lot. And I don't know if that's mainly because, like, I can't hear out of my ear. So everything that you guys feel, like when you're out hiking, you feel it in your chest and everything, I feel in my head. I used to feel it a lot more in the beginning, like the pulse and everything. I could just feel in my head. It was, like, just pounding in my head and in my chest from hiking and walking around. And I don't feel it as much, but I do still feel it. So when I'm on a strenuous hike, and I have to take kind of more breaks than I would normally have to take.
Okay.
So there's things like that, but I hope with time it'll just eventually, like, I'll be at a maintenance level where either I have to do that or I won't have to do it anymore, or I'll still have to kind of in the middle, you know. But other than that, I mean, in the hearing, that was a huge new thing to learn.
And your hearing's back now?
No, it's gone forever. No more hearing in my left ear.
Just dead.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Does it throw off your equilibrium?
A little bit. It definitely throws off like location. So I can't try to locate stuff.
Like blue grouse hunting to be out for you.
Oh, probably. Yeah.
Or a gobble or a bugle.
No, a turkey gobbled. You don't know where it gobbled.
Yeah. I mean, I was fortunate. So I actually did do some hunting last September, and I was fortunate enough, and it was good because I didn't have any hearing aids at the time. And so just trying to locate and everything, my dad would be like, it's over there. Like he's calling. I was like, no, I'm pretty sure it's over there. And so it was stressful. But just having to, I mean, you basically just got to reteach yourself. And the hearing aids help some. And there's another hearing aid that I could get, but I probably won't because I'd have to get another surgery and everything.
Oh, okay.
But I mean, it's just learning how to relocate stuff with just one. I mean, people do it all the time, right?
You figure it out. You adjust. Yeah. What was the injury that took your hearing in your left ear?
So it was and they don't know for sure how it happened, but my inner ear. And they can't fix your inner ear. So that's the only part of the ear that they can't do surgery or fix or anything. And that's what got broken. So basically all the hairs and follicles and everything that's in there are just dead and they're never going to come back.
So there's no,
there's no nothing, which is crazy because you think about where your inner ear was. I mean, his teeth really had to have been far in there. And it just, I mean.
But it didn't shred your ear.
No. It was so weird. I mean, the whole thing is
just
so
a
weird.
Puncture. More.
Yeah.
How many crazy media requests did you get?
How many crazy what?
Media, like interview requests.
I don't even know. At least 10. The first couple weeks, I got one from one of those big talk shows over in New York, morning talk shows or something. And they were like, we want to talk to you tomorrow morning. And we're going to put you on the set. And I was like, No, this isn't happening. Like I still have staples in my head. No, and that's nobody's ever offered me anything, which I don't, you know, I don't really need that.
I was just curious, not so much like, I was just curious if that's how they operate or not.
You know, I don't know. And I don't really ask for money either because I'm like, well, I'll do it, you know, but it's got to be under the right circumstances. So I'm really picky on the interviews and things that I do because I don't want anybody to turn my story into something. Oh, she loved bears and then she got attacked by bears and now she wants to still work for bears. And that's just not me.
Oh, you could spin 1,000 yarns on it, man.
Yeah.
Or you could be like, she had done some bear hunting in the past.
Yeah. Well, people hate that.
And this is karma.
Yeah. So, yeah, there was quite a few. Like I said, I even get hit now on that. What did I say it was? Oh, I was prey. I wasn't prey.
Like a TV show.
Yeah, he didn't hunt me down.
What channel was it?
I think it was the Discovery Channel.
Where they want to do a show, I Am Prey?
Yeah, or I Was Prey.
I Was Prey?
Yeah. I was like, no.
You turned that down.
Yeah, well, I wasn't prey. I think their definition of prey is very different than what my definition is.
So you're not like, you're not really interested in the limelight.
No.
Why'd you come talk to us? I was surprised you did.
Well, because, I don't know, you guys are super well-known, and I love listening to your podcast, and you guys are really educational, and you bring in educational people, and so it's a different interview. I mean, you're not asking me to cry and tear up and talk, you know, you just want to hear my story, and you're asking questions, and you're insightful, and so it's not like you don't want to make it a big emotional mess.
You don't feel the urge to cry right now?
No.
Golly.
If you could go back to that day, you know this. You know what I'm going to ask you.
No, but
if you could go back to that day, would you still get out of the truck and go up the trail?
Yeah.
Really?
Well, because I mean, if I'm going back to this day, right? Am I going back to this day and
knowing what you now know,
that's knowing what I mean. That I was going to get, so I'm going back knowing that I'm going to get attacked.
Yeah.
Oh well, that's tough. But no, I'd probably still go. Because what if it didn't actually happen? What if
you found something in it?
I don't know.
What did you find in it? I mean, you have to be a hell of a lot more confident. Not that you weren't confident then. It sounds like you really were confident and competent, but you're forged by fire now.
Well, that's true. I don't know because even though if I'm going out there knowing that I'm going to get attacked, I could say that, but that's like driving your car knowing that you're going to get in a car accident.
I wouldn't drive it.
Ever.
What I mean is this. Was the life lesson or whatever,
The experience, so exhilarating. The life lessons, so valuable. The things you learned about yourself, so important. That you would take the getting bit and the surgery and the loss of your ear as payment for the experience, or was it not worth it?
No, it was worth it. I mean, you learn a ton about yourself. How often do people get attacked or, you know, they get into something and so many people have told me, they're like, I wouldn't have been able to make it out. And I said, you probably would have. You don't know at the time. And I mean, I survived. I was bound and determined to get out. I was going to get out. And I've learned a lot. Like I definitely thought I was going to be back to work in a month. Well, after being in that hospital, I could barely walk around the hospital just because I was so weak from all the meds and not eating and everything they give you. And you're in there for so long and just walking up my parents' driveway. Of course they have a slated driveway and everything was tough for me. But I figured out what I can do and what I can't do. And granted, the hearing loss it sucks. It's really hard, but I'm learning so much about myself and learning things about my friends and about people and how people really interact together. And I think it's done nothing but I still want to be a bear manager. I still want to work with bears. I have more education now from this bear biting me on the head than I probably did before. And I feel like I can help people out more and teach them and do something with my experience to help them survive and know that they can. I mean, you can. And know that it will happen. You know, sometimes we get complacent and we're out there and we're not always thinking because we just get so involved in the woods. But you do. You have to remember that there's other things out there. That
vigilance.
Yeah.
I bet you won't have a problem with vigilance for a long time.
I hope not.
The happy part of the story, not that any of this is particularly sad. I don't like it that you lost the hearing in your ear and that you had to have surgery and had such a disruption in your life, but it's like uplifting because you're who you are, right? And you have the attitude you have.
Yeah.
Which for me, from sitting in my seat, I'm like, wow, this is like, it's phenomenal that that's your approach and that you don't harbor animosity.
Thank you. I appreciate
toward
that.
Bears is pretty remarkable. And then you wound up, we talked about this earlier, you got a job.
I did.
A regular old job.
Yep. A real adult job.
With bears.
Yeah. So I got the East Panhandle bear biologist position. And so it's bear management. Yep. In Florida. And it's doing bear management, really what I want to do, educating the public and managing, you know, bears. And they have a ton of issues. They've got 4,000 black bears throughout the entire state, roughly, throughout the entire state of Florida. And so there's a lot of bears and there's a lot of people. And so
And they lost their bear season.
Yeah.
Or it kind of comes ebbs and flows, but
yeah,
out now.
Which, you know, isn't always, I mean, hunting, I love hunting and I'm a huge promoter for it, but it's not always the answer when it comes to conflict and issues.
Yeah. Sure.
I mean, there's a lot of other stuff and fencing and just educating the public and letting them know, you know, hey, your garbage can isn't right. Let's get this fixed.
Yeah, you're dealing with the on the ground reality.
Yeah.
They're like, whatever's happening politically or ever around the bear hunts, you still got bears, you still got people.
Right. Right. Yeah. So it'll be a good job. I'm excited.
Are you going to be doing some hair snaring, counting, genetic work?
No, probably not. So our research in Florida normally does some of that. But I did, so when I was there previously a couple years ago, so I'm actually moving back to the place where I did capture and telemetry work and monitored all of our sows with cubs and everything. So I'm super excited about that. And we did, you know, we collected hair for DNA and we tattooed them and put collars on. And then all the cubs had collars, which was really awesome monitoring all these cubs running around. And so I know a lot about the area, so I'm super excited. And I know some of the bears, I'm sure there's some of them are still around, you know.
Is it a state position?
It is. Yeah.
Healthcare.
Yeah. So they provide benefits, but the kind of the way their system works is I don't get vacation days, but once I'm there for a year, then I'll get vacation, which is kind of actually normal, I guess, for some agencies, you know, you don't get vacation until you've been there for a while. So, but yeah.
Good for you.
Thank you. Great.
Yeah, you made it. You're a full-fledged wildlife person.
I know. It's
You're
crazy.
Not an account.
I'm not a tech.
You still got hearing in your right ear.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming on.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Do you got any final things you want to wedge in there? Concluders?
My only concluder is I'm a huge supporter of the Western Bear Foundation, so everybody should kind of look into that.
Okay.
We're doing an event in Boise I'm pretty excited about, and they have a bear relief fund, which is awesome. And it's for anybody who gets attacked by a bear or has any conflicts. And we're definitely going to try to help them out as much as we can. Okay. Which is super awesome because there was a ton of attacks last year. So hopefully we don't have that again, but we definitely want to be able to help people out. So,
oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That's your plug?
That's my plug.
Tell us again.
Western Bear Foundation.
They got a website?
Yeah, they do. And Bear Relief Fund.
Bear Relief Fund.
Yep.
To help offset costs associated with bears.
Yeah. Any hospital bills or anything, we'd definitely love to help out and be able to donate some funds for people who get attacked or have issues.
And in your case, expertise. Funds, funds and expertise.
I don't know about expert, but we'll see.
Yanni, you got anything?
No, I'm good. Thanks for coming. That was great.
Yeah, I'm so glad you came to talk to us.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Don't go doing stupid TV shows.
Okay, I won't.
Be more careful.
I'll try.
All right, thank you.